That's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, we'll talk about one of the forms that many of us encounter first, the fairy tale. We'll talk about why fairy tales endure, how they're interpreted, and whether they're everything people say they are. Then we'll look ahead to the next phase in television with a quiz that considers what you'll see this fall. And as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Oh, and hey, I'm Barry Hardiman. What do you do at NPR?
I am an editor at NPR Weekend Edition.
Well, as many of you know, Barry is our very dear friend, was, I think, the first person who ever guested on our show back in the day, and has not been on our show for... What?
And wasn't on after that.
It's true.
It's the first and last.
No, but you've been gone however long it's been that you've been out where you are now, which is California.
That's true. I'm in Los Angeles, the city of angels.
And how long have you been out there?
Since September, so about 9 months.
That's how long.
And funnily enough, that's how long, you know, it takes to make a baby.
So it's just that California, that beautiful California love.
Totally so, impregnated by the love.
So it's been 9 months since my heart was torn out and dragged across the country.
All of us had our hearts torn out. Torn out, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's that box that's still in the garage, right? Just kidding. I mean, obviously. I don't know why I said just kidding. I'm sorry.
Don't take me literally. I have nobody's heart in a box in my garage. I can tell you've been spending a lot of time around small children. Is that correct?
It's true. In the house. I'm a total shut-in. Thank God for your recommendations.
That's right.
I mean, that was a real news you can use her for this chick here, this sweatpants mobile.
We have all kinds of shows that we only do when Barry is procreating. So, but we're very, very happy to have you back on our regular, ordinary show.
Well, I love hearing your voices.
Yeah, well, we love hearing you in our ear holes also, Barry Hardiman. So the reason why we were going to talk about fairy tales this week is that at the end of this month, they are releasing Maleficent. And Maleficent is the... she's not the stepmother, but she's the stepmother character, the wicked, evil... queen person.
The mistress of all evil.
Oh, the mistress of all... Thank you, Wikipedia Thompson.
Now, have you know, I did in-depth research on... What did you call it? You did call it Wikipedia. Yes, Wikipedia.
So, Maleficent is the woman in Sleeping Beauty, in the Disney cartoon version. Uh-huh. And so places a curse on her, and that's how all the sleeping happens for poor old Sleeping Beauty.
Yep. Beauty she came with, the sleeping happens later.
Right. The beauty she has naturally. The sleeping is a curse.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a version of this, a live-action version of this story coming out with Angelina Jolie. She'll be playing Maleficent and not Sleeping Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got the meaty part.
She's got the gams for it.
That's right. And Sleeping Beauty, also known as Aurora, is being played by a Fanning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were going to talk a little bit about fairy tales. Now, one of the things about this fairy tale is it's not uncommon for fairy tales to have this real undercurrent of darkness and evil and meanness.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not agree, lady who is currently considering reading fairy tales to small children?
Considering? I do. It's horrifying. I have a 3-year-old, so he's, you know, naturally is really interested in the Disney princesses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's true. I mean, there is that there is a darkness. And I will say, too, though, that the Disney strain of darkness, it is generally the same. It's like your mother's dead, mm-hmm. or, you know, you're an orphan of some kind.
Right.
And, or you're just a lady who's been wronged and you're mad about that. So you got the stepmothers, you got the angries, and then you have, you know, a beautiful young woman. Although recently Disney has been working hard on making their princesses a little more up to date.
Yes,
so
I think a little less sitting around.
A little less sitting around helplessly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, exactly. In fact, does it annoy anyone how, like, spunky, you know, the princesses are, like, in this way of, like, look, we're so feminist. Like, sometimes it kind of gives me the annoyance.
I like what? My princesses inert.
Okay, it is official, though. It is official, though, that Disney now kind of can't win. If the question is, we can't necessarily have it both ways. I would certainly, as the parent of a daughter, rather that the female characters in Disney movies have a certain amount of independence and agency.
Totally. And as a parent, I am so thrilled that my son is obsessed with a movie that has two female protagonists and
right.
is running yes. around, like, you know,
oh, so he
pretending
loves,
to be Queen Elsa.
He loves Frozen like everyone.
Oh,
everyone,
God.
Everyone except my 10-year-old daughter.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
see,
well,
that's
she's a
that's
rebel.
The thing is, though, it's total contrarianism. It's not actually like...
I wonder where she got that.
No idea. No, she's just... Yeah, she defines herself entirely in opposition to things, which has its place, but I'd like to get her into some things.
I was talking to a friend of mine recently who has two young kids, and so her house is 24/7 Frozen, and she was saying only half kiddingly, you know, what's the deal with Disney? Why do they keep killing off the parents? Can't the parents just be there by their side saying, hey, we believe in you, and here's some Lunchables. And, you know, like just
right.
kind of go along for them.
Exactly.
For the
here, watch a Disney movie.
Absolutely. But it's not Disney. I mean, like, if you go back to Grimm's Fairy Tales, right. that's where this comes from, because these are stories we tell our kids mm-hmm. to get them to abandon us. Mm-hmm. We're giving them the
right.
psychic armor, the psychic tools to say goodbye.
I have hit puberty.
Right. And you were talking before, Barry, in the email exchange we were doing about Bruno Bettelheim, who said,
yes.
among other things, and I'll defer to you because you did a couple theses on him.
a couple of thesi.
But one of the
systems.
Things. Yes. He said essentially that these stories don't just exist to tell kids that there are monsters out there. And I think that's where a lot of parents who want to protect their kids, it's a very natural impulse to say, I don't want to, you know, expose my kids to this. There's time for them to learn that later. But these stories don't just do that. They say there are monsters in the world, and here's how you defeat them. You're selling yourself certain acting.
Through magic.
Well, no. Everything's a symbol.
With spells.
Everything's a symbol. That's the way these stories work. Well, especially like if we compare our fairy tales, the Grimm's fairy tales, to like the fairy tales in Germany with Shock-Headed Peter, who remember, if you recall, was a boy who didn't bathe and so nobody liked him. And then in that same collection of stories, there's a girl who plays with matches and then she burns to death. And then there's a kid who sucks his thumb. So a man comes with giant scissors and lops it off. And so these stories came out in like the late 1800s, I think.
The whole show to just be this.
No.
I do too.
These stories
funny
came out
German
in, the,
accents.
In the late 1800s, right? And so generation after generation of German children grew up on these stories, and that turned out okay. Nothing.
What's the worst that could happen?
Especially in Germany.
Yes, obsession. All right. Germans are fine.
I mean, I think one of the things that's always interesting to me is that if you get your fairy tales from Disney, you get a certain kind of fairy tale where there's a threat and there's something that you have to overcome and you overcome it and then everything's okay. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to vanquish someone and they turn to dust or something like that. But when you actually go back and read like the Grimm's fairy tales or the older versions of a lot of these stories, all of a sudden you're reading along and it's like, and then they poked his eyes out. And you're whoa.
Right, you lose a foot.
Whoa,
all right.
What?
Well, and
all
Sleeping
right.
Beauty in particular is a really gross one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like a rape.
Yeah.
By the time the stepmother comes in, she's half ogre. She's trying to eat the kids.
Right.
The whole thing, if you read Bettelheim, sort of the way of like of explaining sort of puberty and all of these. I mean, but so Sleeping Beauty is chock full of the stuff you have to overcome is particularly bloody and gross.
Okay.
And,
the year, 1973. The place, Concord Friends Nursery School in Concordville, Pennsylvania. Young Glenn Weldon sits there listening to Miss Deanna Ryan read us the story of Cinderella. Now, I was a pretty jaded five-year-old. I had heard the story. I was aware of its work. It wasn't for me. There was too many dresses, not enough dragons. I tuned out. I was thinking about candy. I don't know. But all of a sudden, I hear her say, because her foot didn't fit, she lopped off her heel with an axe, and then she chopped off her toe, but there was so much blood in the shoe. And this is the first experience I had of like a story having an effect on a room where all of a sudden all these kids were like, we're like ruffed grouse. All of a sudden you're being chased from the bush. And we're like, what? And she could tell that she had made a mistake. She'd picked the wrong book. And so she just
didn't read it.
She picked the right one.
She just powered through. I seem to remember her speeding up. And then at one point at the very end, she said, and I'll remember this to my dying day, she said, and as for the stepsisters, Whoa. We're like, what? And then she said, birds came from the woods and pecked their eyes out. Okay, nap time. And we were like, no nap time. There'll be no nap time. And
nap
so we
time.
All broke into response groups and we were all
caucused for a while.
We were all like junior Robert Evans, like, was it too much? Just enough. And we made her go back and read us the ending, like word for word. And this is what she read to us. This is the end of Cinderella, which is a very short story, actually. When the wedding with the prince was to be held, the two false sisters came, wanting to gain favor with Cinderella and to share her good fortune. When the bridal couple walked into the church, the older sister walked on their right side and the younger on their left side, and the pigeons pecked out one eye from each of them. Afterwards, as they came out of the church, the older one was on the left side and the younger one was on the right side, and then the pigeons pecked out the other eye from each of them. And thus, for their wickedness and falsehood, they were punished with blindness as long as they lived. Wouldn't and that's you why you always leave a note. The idea of a Cinderella story is the one that ends with happy ever after, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, in this story, mm-hmm. the happy ending happens off screen because yeah, it's right. all about punishment. That's what these right. stories originally existed to do, was to have a moral lesson.
Yeah. I mean, Do you find, Barry, that your child has interest in fairy tales and fables and things of that nature?
Oh, yeah. You know, we have all of these old sort of the book versions of the Disney's sort of around the house. And he really does like, you know, I mean, he's a 3-year-old. He likes to see that there's a bad person and a good person. And I will say the things that he is most interested in when we discuss anything that's difficult or we like Frozen, for instance, is, you know, what happened to the ship because the parents die in the ship.
Yep.
You know, as much as he thinks that little snowman is hilarious, the thing, you know, he's into this thing right now where he's telling me a story about Princess Elsa. And he always adds the thing he wants to hear about. And the thing he always wants to hear about is, tell me about Queen Elsa and her parents. Tell me about Queen Elsa and the sled. So anything that scared him mm-hmm. or, and so I will say that based on, you know, the Bettelheim reading, he is really having this sort of the socially evolved, you know, I mean, it does work. If you're familiar with Into the Woods, which is the Sondheim.
I was going to bring it up.
Musical. There's a great, great, great lyric in the final song.
Sometimes a spell may last past what you can see and turn against you. Careful the tale you tell, that is the spell.
It's true. Like, you can see that even in a 3-year-old, that this is any story, whether it's a fairy tale or, you know, it's just Little Bear's Little Boat, is the means by which he is exploring the world, and particularly the way that he's exploring things that are scary. That's the it works.
Yeah, let me pick up on Into the Woods, which it's probably the most accessible of Sondheim's musicals, but it is my favorite as well, because it's so smart. Okay, so it starts with I wish. That's the very first thing.
In a far-off kingdom,
more than anything,
lived a fair maiden, a sad young lad,
I wish,
and a childless baker.
More than life,
I wish,
with his
more
wife.
More than anything,
more than the moon,
I wish,
the king is giving a festival.
More than life,
I wish,
I wish to go to the festival.
More than riches,
I wish my cow would give us some milk.
More than anything,
I wish we had a child.
Please, pal,
child.
Please, pal,
I wish to go to the
I wish you give us some milk.
I have a child, I wish.
That's what kicks every story. Somebody wanting something that they don't have. That's how every story tells. And it ends, if you leave at intermission, you think this is the happiest musical you've mm-hmm. ever seen because everything ties up. There is a happily ever after that, and that's the big closing before the intermission song.
And there are people who have seen it, like on PBS, yep. who thought that was
who
the
fell
end
asleep.
Of it.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, who
really?
Thought that was the
who
end
turned
of
off
it?
Their TV.
And absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have known of those.
Who doesn't want
people.
To see the pledge drive?
Yeah. And then the second half is all about all of that happily ever after falling apart because stories don't end. They go on and on and on. The most brilliant thing about it is at the very end, there is another happy ever after. I wish. That's the very last mm-hmm. thing because stories don't end and it keeps going forever.
And so desires on. Go on forever.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Desire exists.
And I think one of the things that show is about for me is that the structure of the first act of kind of everything ending with the traditional expected happy ending and then the second act is that it underscores the fact that a lot of the things that people want in the first act and the way they're mm-hmm. going about getting them are very bizarre, mm-hmm. which you're not necessarily encouraged to examine in a fairy tale. But if you actually were having a baby that way, getting married that way, meeting your husband that way, that would be very strange.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he's kind of taken those stories mm-hmm. and while keeping them in the realm of being fairy tales, he's kind of saying, mm-hmm. like, what are the emotional implications of, you know, running away and meeting a prince who you don't know and kind of getting all swept up in it. That's what I think is kind of brilliant about it.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, and this is part of the conceit of shows like Once Upon a Time and Grimm and stuff, is that they are examining the darker elements of these stories.
Right, exactly.
I worry about Maleficent because I worry that it's not going to be just her being evil and badass for an hour and a half or two, probably. It's going to be a redemption arc.
It's backstory.
It's going to be the backstory of how she became, I don't care.
It's going to be environmentally something.
I don't want the Anakin Skywalker version.
But isn't it Wicked?
It's just,
I know. Wicked ends on a very downbeat note. I mean, Wicked ends with, you know what's going to happen. I think they're going to try and do something here just because it's PG-13.
Wicked,
right?
I actually thought, if we're talking about the book and not the musical, I thought Wicked had some real, it was a little heavy-handed in the way of, but there were some levels to it, whereas, I don't know, what I've read of the synopsis on the internet says that this is going to be a little less layered.
This feels like it's just going to be camp in a way,
right.
Like just a big, loud Angelina Jolie acting up a storm in as big a fashion as possible.
Yep.
Yeah. There's probably some truth to that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you should come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and tell us what you think about fairy tales, what you think about Maleficent, and of course, whether we are right that Into the Woods is like practically the best thing ever, which it is. The other thing we were going to talk about today, it is Upfronts Week in network land. And what that means is this is the time when they are announcing what they've picked up for the fall and they are showing it to advertisers, hoping that advertisers will start buying up the ad space now. So we're getting our first glimpses, really, of the fall shows. Now, before I give this quiz, I want to emphasize that this is the part of the year when we don't know anything about these actual shows.
As opposed to other parts of the year where we know a little tiny.
Right, exactly. This is the part of the year when we have no idea which of these shows will be good. But what is worth being amused by, in my personal opinion, is the marketing and the announcements and how similar they sound when they haven't all been fleshed out yet. Now, at this time last year, I would have been making jokes about Trophy Wife, which I wound out up loving. So, take it with a grain of salt. Nevertheless, we got a quiz.
Right.
Upfronts, announcements, marketing. And we're going to start with some questions about the NBC shows. Because of the way that NBC has chosen to go about marketing its shows, the format of the NBC questions is going to be guessing which one of these taglines is the real one that they are using to promote the show. So we'll start with Barry out there in the wonderful state of California.
I'm in network land.
Mm-hmm. You are. Maybe you'll have extra knowledge. So NBC has announced that it will be running State of Affairs, a drama series starring Katherine Heigl as Charleston Tucker, a CIA analyst who works for the president, who is played by Alfre Woodard. Mm-hmm. And so the tagline for this show, Barry, that they are using to promote it is one of the following. Keeping the West Wing from going south. That's A. B, all the president's men are nothing compared to her.
I really hope it's not that.
That's B. C, even the Secret Service doesn't have this many secrets. D is hail to the chief. A hail of gunfire, that is.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, that one would be lovely. It's either B or C. I'm afraid it's B. It can't be B. They didn't. Please tell me it's C. I'm going with C.
You're going with C? No, I'm afraid it's all the president's men are nothing.
No!
Compared to
no!
Her.
Wow. Oh my God, I just turned into Maleficent. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No,
that's a real... Good
it's
Lord.
Pretty gross.
Real.
Oh my God. Well, they sure don't care about equal pay, but they do care about this other... Good Lord. Sorry. Stream of feminist rhetoric.
Just barfing up feminism.
I am. I totally barfed up feminism right there.
All right. So, so Glenn.
Yep.
Bad Judge stars Kate Walsh as, quote, wild child Rebecca Wright. And she is a tough judge whose private life is, as they put it, anything but innocent. She meets a needy 8-year-old boy who may, in fact, be the one thing that starts to tame this bad judge. The possible taglines are A, upholding the rules by day, breaking them by night. B, she's ready to rule. C, under the robe, she's all woman. And D, she's all business until she's not. Correct.
Okay. Is this an hour long? Is this a sitcom?
I think it's a comedy.
What is this, Millionaire?
I'm not sure which one it is. It might be like, kind of like a light drama. I don't know. I didn't look that closely.
Yeah, if it's about how she kind of looks after an eight-year-old, it's not going to be too skeevy.
I will say that the key art has her sort of sprawled on the bench with her gavel kind of dangling in one hand, and you're looking kind of right down her shirt with her robe open, and she's wearing red cowboy boots that are like kicked up behind her. She's on the desk lying on her front with her feet kicked up. So you're looking at her feet kicked up.
What was the first one again?
Upholding the rules by day, breaking them by night.
I'm going to give them no credit for cliche avoidance and go with A.
It is A.
All right.
Well done.
All right.
Well done, well done. Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
The Mysteries of Laura, which is not, as I pointed out today on Twitter.
It's not porn?
It is not porn, and it is not what it really sounds like, which is a 1982 TV movie about a woman who has a face transplant and then loses her virginity.
Yep.
That is what I think it sounds like.
Yeah, with Tori Spelling involved, right? That's not what it is.
The Mysteries of Laura stars Deborah Messing as an NYPD homicide detective who is...
Okay, I'm out.
Well,
right.
and this is one where you really should hear some of just the way they say it. Deborah Messing stars as Laura Diamond, a brilliant NYPD homicide detective who balances her Columbo day job with a crazy family life that includes two unruly twin boys and a soon-to-be ex-husband, also a cop, who just can't seem to sign the divorce papers.
Wow, that's a lot of dependent clauses in there.
When you inevitably speak at my funeral, can you not list my accomplishments in the voice that you're using? And then in 2001, he had a son.
Okay, so here are your possible taglines. A, she could bring home the bacon if only there were time for breakfast. B, two tough jobs, one hot mess. C, because you can't lock up family. And D, she can read you the riot act or read you your rights.
Oof. It could be any of those. Those are all terrible.
Yes, it is really one of those.
You're a genius.
I'm going to go with locking up the family.
It is actually two tough jobs, one hot mess.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say two tough jobs, one tough cookie, which is worse.
Yeah. Well, nothing better, maybe. All right. we are back around to you, Barry Hardiman.
Oh, dear. Okay.
NBC's Constantine is about a demon hunter with a wickedly naughty wit who's already damned to hell and decides to save some pretty girl. Mm-hmm. The tagline is, A, the underworld doesn't even know what's coming. B, when a bad guy isn't such a bad guy. C, when you dance with the devil, the music never stops. And D, giving hell hell.
Oh my God. I feel like bad guy is just your own geniosity. That just sounds like a funny.
Now you're pulling a Thompson.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Like, I just feel like that's a thing you would say to me and I would laugh forever. And if so, kudos, NBC. But I feel like giving hell hell sounds like somebody, you could just hear some like dude being like, oh, genius, run with it.
Cut, right? Print.
Exactly. Like I can see that dude. Let's do D.
You are right.
Wow.
It is giving hell hell.
Hell. It's based on a great comic book series, and actually the trailer looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Just going to say.
But the tagline is, you know.
The guy really looks like the comic.
All right. All right, Stephen, we are switching over to ABC.
All right.
And we are now talking about a show called Selfie.
Oh, okay.
Here's part of the description. Eliza Dooley has 263,000 followers who hang on her every post, tweet, and selfie.
God.
But one lonely day, she has a revelation. So what is her revelation? Is it being friended is not the same as having actual friends? Is it B, she's got everything she ever dreamed of, but nothing she really wants? Is it C, you can't delete your feelings? Or is it D, she's revealed everything, but nobody really knows her?
Wow. Oh, God, I hate
actually, at my funeral,
so
I do want you to use that voice. That voice is really incredible.
20 years from now, that is going to be the equivalent of, like, what, The Net? Yeah. The Sandra Bullock movie where it's like the sound of a modem firing up is like incredibly suspenseful, and it's going to look or like War Games.
Yep.
Uh-huh. I am going to go with A.
Yes.
That is actually correct.
The
that
only reason I wouldn't have gone with that is that I thought that friending something is too trademarked.
But, right.
You can't have anything about friends.
No, that is correct. Being friended is not the same as having actual friends. That's her revelation that I guess sets off some
So it's based on the incredibly hoary notion that like online friendships aren't real.
Mm-hmm. Correct. As we know. Mm-hmm. As we know.
Oh my God.
So I think I'm going in the wrong order. I think I changed order. But,
I would have gotten it anyway.
But that brings us around to Glenn, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that makes it your turn. All right. ABC also has a show called Forever. And it is not based on the Judy Blume.
That's where
oh,
I went.
Forever. Dr. Henry Morgan, New York City's star medical examiner, as they describe him, is looking for something. What is it? Is it A, his mother who faked her death? Is it B, a cure for his wife's terminal illness? Is it C, the fountain of youth? Or is it D, the answer to his inexplicable immortality?
Hmm. I'm going to say it's one of those sort of fantasy ones. So it's C or D. I'm going to go with D.
You guys are doing very well on this quiz. It is, in fact, the answer to his own inexplicable immortality.
Sweet.
All right. Barry.
Yes.
ABC has a show called The Whispers. And The Whispers is about some unseen enemies in this show that are involved in a quote-unquote suspenseful race to save humanity. We've got the unseen enemies, and against them, we are in a suspenseful race to save humanity. Now, what are the unseen enemies in The Whispers? Are they A, aliens who are using our children against us? Are they B, secret agents who have invaded a suburban neighborhood and are undermining it with gossip? Are they C, Russians? Or are they D, a doo-wop group?
I'm going with doo-wop group.
It's the aliens.
It's the aliens!
Aliens are using our children against us.
I do want to see where the unseen enemy is a doo-wop group.
I felt like maybe it was... I didn't know it wasn't a comedy!
I gotta say, I didn't think she was gonna bite on that one.
Nor did
I. Well, I thought maybe it was a comedy.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. All right, I'm gonna go back to the order I was going in before because it's time now to ask a question about Gotham on Fox.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The promotional copy describes the way a young Detective Gordon, who will one day be Commissioner Gordon, stumbles upon the murder of Thomas and Martha Wayne. Spoiler alert, Batman's parents are dead. He meets their son, Bruce, who is described as what? A, intensely haunting. B, hauntingly intense. C, darkly moody. D, bright and funny.
Okay. Hauntingly intense or intensely haunting. What's the third one?
Darkly moody.
Darkly moody. But if you're moody, you're darkly moody. I don't think there's a way to be happily moody. Brightly moody.
Three-year-olds, I'm just saying.
Okay, all right. Hauntingly intense. I'm going to say hauntingly intense.
You are right. It is hauntingly intense.
Sweet.
That's awesome.
Hauntingly, and not bright and funny.
Nope.
Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
In Fox's Wayward Pines, which is some kind of dark crime thingy, Juliette Lewis is playing who? This is in quotes from the network.
Okay.
A bartender who doesn't mince words. A drama teacher who doesn't play around. A taxi driver with something to hide. Or a dog walker with more to tame than a collie.
Well, the fact that you specified that this was in quotes makes me think that it's something like a dog walker or
They're all like that, though.
Yeah.
No, I felt like B and D were the most like that. What was B again?
A drama teacher who doesn't play around.
Drama teacher who doesn't play around.
It is the bartender who doesn't mince words.
Yep.
She's a bartender who doesn't mince words.
There's going to be some word mincing anyway, I'm just saying, based on that.
Flagrant false advertising.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
All right, Barry, we are back around to you, ma'am. The new Fox show Hieroglyph is about a man on a journey in ancient Egypt. Which of the following is not featured in the show's key art, which is the little...
A doo-wop,
you know,
group.
The
Sorry.
The image that they are using right now to promote the show.
Okay.
Which is not featured in the key art for Hieroglyph, about a man on a journey in ancient Egypt. Some blood, some hieroglyphics, a man on a journey, or a woman's half-naked ass.
So I feel absolutely like the presence of ass in the quiz denotes ass on the... Sorry, God. I think there's no blood.
You think there's no blood?
I'm going to say hieroglyph.
There is...
Oh, there's no... Oh, that does make more sense. Okay, but I did say no blood, so...
There is actually no man on a journey.
Really?
Just blood, hieroglyphs, and ass.
There's butt, blood, there's some hieroglyphics, and there's a butt.
There you go.
Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
Catherine McPhee, last seen on television during The Short and Strange Life of Smash, is returning this fall on a CBS drama series called Scorpion, which is about a network of super geniuses. Does Catherine McPhee play the main super genius? The coordinator of the super genius network? The novice super genius who's just getting started, or a waitress who understands geniuses?
Oh, amazing.
I mean, I gotta go with a waitress who understands geniuses. That feels like the role Catherine McPhee was born to play.
That's correct.
Yes. Oh, man.
She is a waitress who understands geniuses. All right, Glenn, I have a relatively easy one for you. Which of the following franchise extensions is coming this fall? Is it NCIS New Orleans? Is it CSI Boston? Is it Law & Order Tech Response Unit? Or is it Bettina the Brave, about Sabrina the Teenage Witch's niece?
CSI.
NCIS New Orleans.
And almost all the letters.
You did. It's true. But you all did very well. Y'all did very well. You did much better than Paint or Perp, which was the last
that was
quiz
tough.
That I gave before Glenn's incredibly evil Batman quiz.
Yep.
Do we have an official winner? I'm thinking it's Glenn.
It must be Glenn.
So Glenn is the winner of our quiz.
Sweet.
You can walk around with that pumping you up this week, buddy.
Yep.
You know all about upfronts.
You don't have to mince words at all.
That's right.
My life
no
is
mincing.
Small.
No mincing.
Yep. Well, can't promise both.
Yeah. And that brings us to our final segment. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, first of all this talk of television means we should have a quick update in how we have done in the TV pool. Since all week long they've been announcing what's being canceled and what's being saved. Trey picked Hostages. Uh-huh. Hostages is gone, right?
It is gone.
So Trey loses.
Yes.
Glenn picked Hello Ladies.
Oh, wow.
Which has been canceled a while ago.
Yeah. Yep.
I picked Masters of Sex, which is the sexy, sex-havingest sex show on television.
That's still going.
And you, Linda, picked Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which has been renewed. So
for once, I'm not terrible at this.
Yep.
For once, I'm not the worst.
So you went with your gut.
I was really hoping you'd pick like the Crazy Ones or the Michael J. Fox show. Yeah. Oh, it would have been so great because then I'd have won. But we're going to have to keep an eye out as the years wear on.
Well, and
you picked a
cable one. I definitely am the one who got out there, and I bravely picked something and had to get ratings to get picked up.
Yep.
Look, this is not a bravery competition. This is a show picking competition. Anyway, my half victory is making me happy. I've been talking about albums week after week, but this is just kind of a season where lots of good records are coming out. There's a new record called Last War by Hayley Bonner, which is terrific. But what is really, really making me happy is a press release that just crossed my desk. With the subject line, Hansen announce Hops Ale.
Yeah.
And it is not merely a Hansen-branded beer, but it is from Hansen Brothers Beer Company, the brewery run by the band Hansen. Sure. I will be ordering it, taste testing it, and giving a full report.
Good for you.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Stephen. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
A relatively new graphic novel called Black is the Color by Julia Gaffrere. It is spelled G-F-O with an umlaut, R-E-R. That's G-F-O with an umlaut, R-E-R, but it's pronounced Gaffrere like despair. And that kind of ties in with the subject of the book. You started off as a webcomic. It's a 17th century sailor who gets cast adrift from his ship, gets exposed to the elements, and he meets at some point a mermaid. It kind of riffs on The Little Mermaid, but it doesn't have that fun, happy kind of tone. It's very dark. It's very funny. The mermaids have a sort of modern sensibility, not in the sort of Shrek-y, smash-mouthed sense, but they have an irony, and some of the things they do have a cruelty, perhaps, and a heartlessness, which is just because they don't understand human culture. It's gorgeous. The shots of the seascapes are amazingly done, and it's so ultimately moving. It's a very slim little graphic novel, but it's great. It's called Black is the Color. Because of its tone and because of its subject, it's not for everyone, but then nothing good is. So.
Yeah, very good. Uh-huh. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Barry Hardiman, what is making you happy this week besides hopefully being on our show?
This really made me happy because, first of all, I left the house, which was really great. Second of all, I'm still outside of the house right now.
You've seen people besides the UPS guy.
Totally. It's amazing. Well, I mean, you know, the UPS guy actually commented on the other day that I was wearing a watch. He was like, wow, you're really, really putting things together. Looking good. I was like, thank you.
One accessory at a time.
Yeah. Exactly. Next up, primer. anyway, since I am, as you know, shut in, and I've been, you know, wending my way through all kinds of different television, but there's some that I can watch by myself, Real Housewives, and there's some that I can watch, you know, around the kid, and there's some that I can watch around the husband. And the one that we both really love right now is Bar Rescue.
I've seen Bar Rescue.
Thank you. I'm glad. I am loving Bar Rescue, and so it's like a thing I can agree on the couch right now. So John Taffer is this bar expert who goes in and takes, you know, like a failing bar and turns it into a thriving business. It takes a really failing business, like the dive bar that's like girls in bikinis and is kind of truly disgusting. And then he makes it like only slightly better, but enough to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of, I love how sort of, but he, Taffer, this guy who's this huge personality who really takes drinking seriously. And I don't mean that in a funny way at all.
No, he does.
I mean, he is so particular about, you know, I mean, I've bartended a lot. And so there were definitely times that, you know, you'd go after your shift, you'd have a drink. You are not doing that if you work at a John Taffer bar.
No.
No one is drinking on the job.
No.
No one is getting friendly with the ladies at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
It is so serious and so responsible. I love his sort of attitude about it. And by the way, it's on Spike TV. so think of that what you will.
Yeah.
But anyway, loving Bar Rescue, loving John Taffer.
Wonderful. Thank you, Barry Hardiman. So what is making me happy this week? I have just returned from a trip up to New York and seen some friends. Had some time to hang out with friend of the show, Parul Segal.
Mm-hmm.
Had some time to hang out with friend of the show, Sarah Bunting. Sure. Introduced the two of them to each other, which was pretty rad.
Nice.
That is a thing that needed to happen, and I brought it about in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was up there, I did a bunch of things that were really fun. I saw a taping of Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is very important to Glenn.
Yep.
A big thing in Glenn's life.
Yep.
They had a gazillion guests at this particular one. They had sort of their full crew, but then they also had, like, John Hodgman was there, and Jonathan Colton was there, and Scott Adsit was there, and Zachary Levi was there. Mm-hmm. Dick Cavett
was there.
Oh.
Dick Cavett was there, and he was wonderfully funny and really is not a bad guy for a radio play, to be perfectly honest. So that was a ton of fun. But what I have decided to focus on this week is this really, really good book called The Devil's Candy, which I was reading this weekend. It's the story of the making of the 1990 film adaptation of The Bonfire of the Vanities. And it's like almost 500 pages long. She had this woman, Julie Salomon, who wrote it, had pretty much full access to this production, which, of course, when they gave her full access to this production and she was a reporter, they didn't necessarily know that it was going to go down in history as one of the most epic, gigantic, depressing flops of all time. She kind of watches like each little bit. It's like it starts with kind of an idea and they kind of want to make a good movie, but they're not super committed to kind of this really almost like acrid Tom Wolfe tone.
Right.
They immediately start softening up the characters. As soon as they cast Tom Hanks and Bruce Willis, they're going in the direction of kind of making these guys a lot more amiable. Mm-hmm. And that starts to throw off the balance because then they're concerned that all the white people in the book will be wonderful and all the black people in the book will be terrible. They're like, oh, we'll have balance. We'll make the judge, who is a Bronx Jew in the book, Morgan Freeman, so that that way there will be a good black person because so many of the black people in the movie are going to be shown to be pimps and prostitutes. We will have the judge in the person of Morgan Freeman, who at the time was much earlier in his Morgan Freeman-ness. He had he had kind of just done like Lean on Me. It was that stage. He hadn't started playing God, God and presidents.
Yep.
The whole book is this just completely fascinating. It's like it's dishy, but it's not gossipy. Like, it's not mean. It's just, it's how these things happen. It's how a bunch of smart, talented, you know, people, talented to varying degrees in some cases, but people who are not unable to make things that connect with audiences, right? Bruce Willis had just done Die Hard. Tom Hanks was in the process of turning into Tom Hanks. Melanie Griffith had just done Working Girl. Brian De Palma had done, you know, Body Double, but also, you know, a bunch of other stuff that, you know, Carrie and had just done The Untouchables. So it's people who can do this, but like they, everything just went horribly, horribly wrong. And the book is really good. And again, it's called The Devil's Candy. And I strongly, strongly recommend it. It's really a wonderful book. So that is what is making me happy this week, is this fantastic book. And of course, having Barry Hardiman on our show. Because we are always happy to hear your lovely voice. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Barry at B Hardiman, H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica underscore Reedy. That's R-E-E-D-Y. You can follow our also producer, Nick Fountain, at Nick Fountain. Nick, like Nick, Fountain, like Fountain. And our esteemed producer, emeritus, and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Especially Barry Hardiman.
Oh, thank you guys. It's such a pleasure to hear your chirpy East Coast tones. Especially you, Weldon, your chirpiness.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.